You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Jürgen Meyer H. He's in Berlin at the moment. Jürgen, thank you for talking with me today.
Welcome. Great.
So, Jürgen, I'd like to talk about a few of your projects. You know, obviously they're architectural-based projects, but many of them are also asking questions in the art world and our installations and art. And we can talk about the line between the two. But to begin with, which may help us define kind of your approach to these things for those who don't know you, I know you have a project coming up in Times Square in New York called XXX. Can you tell me a little bit about that project?
The XXX project is really fascinating because it somehow reintroduces a different form of public seating in a different way to look at Times Square, more in a vertical way to look up rather than on the displays. It also deals with kind of the seedy history of Times Square, which seems to be lost, but there's still this kind of echo of all the adult movie theaters that were there. It was kind of a different experience of a city, so that kind of vibrates with the project. And of course, then XXX is also when you send love from a specific place or in a letter to send to your friends. So it has multiple readings, but the experience in itself is there is huge X seating elements where you're on one with other three people, and you're looking up, and then there are so many other surveillance cameras and public webcams that you can hack into or you can actually link into, and they are looking down onto you. So there's a different view, a vertical relationship between you looking up and the cameras looking down onto you, and that will be a different and new experience that also will be mediated over social media, and you can communicate that basically globally.
So how will it be set up exactly? Where will people see? I mean, I know Times Square well. I know that it's seedy past well. It's wonderful to kind of acknowledge, too. It's true that you don't hear about that much anymore. It's just all new. But how exactly will it take place? Where will people be sitting in Times Square, and what will they be seeing, if that's correct?
Yeah, the location was just fixed, and it will be between 43rd and 44th Street and 7th Avenue. So it's like in the very center of Times Square. And actually, when I started to study in 1990 and 1992-3, I remember the big arts program that was running along 42nd Street, which was kind of reinterpreting all these movie theaters that were just closing, and it was just before the whole area was kind of remodeled.
Was that Creative Time that was doing it, the arts organization or the Public Art Fund?
I think so, yeah. Now we are involved with the Times Square Arts Program, Times Square Advisory.
Right.
And at that time, I don't know who was involved with it. I remember a Barbara Kruger project and the Dillis Graffiti one with the big lips speaking on the door. So that was kind of my first, or it's actually the first memory that I have of Times Square when I think about that area.
So in this project, in that space, what exactly is going to happen between, because there is right in the center of Times Square, right? That's an incredible spot. What will happen in that space, and how will visitors approach it and enter into this space you're creating?
Well, if you think about what is kind of allowed and what is not allowed in public space, there are all these kind of signs, like an X that tells you not to eat, not to drink, not to sit, not to maybe talk on the phone. So all of that somehow now becomes allowed on these axes where you're lying down in a public space, again, in an area which is all about rushing through, you know, kind of being dynamic, being, you know, on the run. And here you have a different form of rest and a different form of perception of that area. And that's what, of course, you know, introduces a different form of also body posture, body position in that very urban environment.
And so are people asked to lay down? Is there an invitation to that? Or is this all happening on cameras and through social media?
It's real furniture, and I think it's once there is something there, you can rest and lay down. You know, you don't have to invite people. It's automatic that you're just using it. And it's very kind of low, let's say, low barrier. No, how you call it? You know, it you don't need to make a sign to actually lay down. It's a very kind of inviting, you know, seating element or lying down element. And so that's one experience which is very initial. And then there are all these other layers of information and of kind of relationship with the space and with media that then you discover step by step.
When will that open in New York?
At this point, opening date is set for August 22nd, and I hope it stays within that time frame, plus minus 1 or 2 days, I guess.
Very good. And let's talk about another project, Parasol in Spain. For those viewers who don't know it, can you introduce that project? Because I think that touches on, correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of aspects of your career that shows the breadth of what you're doing and the depth of what you're doing and how it crosses disciplines.
Yeah, I think part of what XXX is doing comes out of the learning that we went through by doing Metropole Parasol in Seville. It's maybe one of the most, let's say, complex, innovative, very multi-programmatic experiential public spaces that we have. And by working on this for 7 years, which is in the very center of a very urban, dense city, which is Seville. It has an archaeology basement. It has everyday program like the food market and restaurants and shops. It has an elevated plaza for specific events and program. It has this huge, wooden structure, the largest timber construction in the world, as we learned from our engineers, as some kind of a shadow device, but also kind of the eye catcher that creates the space. And you can go up and have a view on the panorama terrace across the city, and there's also a restaurant. So it has all these multi-layered urban programs that happen in different times of the day, and they also inform each other, and they're completely, they were densely used with different people, different interest groups, and different in different times of the day and of the year. And so in a way, it has the same kind of the same importance for Seville as maybe Times Square has for New York City. And by also activating that space with different forms of cultural programs, sports program, public viewing, political demonstrations, concerts, flamenco festivals, sports events, all of that creates a pulsating heart of a city. And in the extreme, as we were able to realize it with the city of Seville and all the partners involved.
Such a gorgeous city to work in. That must have been remarkable to work there. How has that project grown now that you see it activated and it is this sort of amazing area of culture and exchange? How has it evolved? When you look at that project and what it's grown into, What is particularly successful, or perhaps what surprised you about its success?
To be honest, like when we were in the process of designing it or working on it after we won the competition, there were some, not many, but there were some interest groups who really didn't like the project and thought that it would kill the historic environment of the city or even like traditional rituals like the Semana Santa, the week before Easter, where they have all these floats with Christ and Maria's, like running in a Mary's, like carried through the city. The year after it opened, all these people who were fighting so much against the project completely turned around and put that project with, this historic sculptures of Jesus or Mary, on their program cover, because they realized that actually also these kind of rituals needed refreshment and needed to be kind of brought into the 21st century. And this was, I think, the turning point where from that moment on, it really got embraced by the people of Seville and also, of course, the tourists. And it shows how that project is also a symbol for the innovation capacity of the city, in terms of construction business, but also in terms of spirit. And that just continued. It really works so well for everybody. It's the everyday hangout place for families and children. It works as an advertising backdrop for products. It's actually the advertising symbol now for the city when they come to tourist fairs and show the city. That's when they show Metropole Parasol as the representation of Seville. It really, you know, helped the whole area of the city to grow and to improve the business. There's the northern part of the downtown Seville, which was kind of cut off from the southern part, which is very lively and where all the business was going on. That part now is called Soho of Seville. There are many shops and stores opening up, cafes. It really became a bustling part of Sevilla, and that's where all the nightlife is happening now. So it really transformed the city in a very impressive way, and it works for demonstrations, you know, with political parties to discuss about the future of Spain or of Seville, and you know the culture of Spain and Andalusia. But it works on also on a very, let's say, everyday level to celebrate the city, hang out, and enjoy being with your friends and your family and meeting other people.
That's so exciting that it was that it's so successful, because of course that is always a contentious issue of how it'll fit into to historic context like Seville, which is an extraordinary place. Let's move forward to the high rise, the shopping mall that you're making in Berlin. I know you have a very unusual approach to that. Can you tell us a little bit about what's happening there and the size of that project?
Yeah. Besides some high-rise projects that are now also on our boards, actually in our computers, mostly in Düsseldorf and one in Berlin, we also work on another form of public space, which is called Vault. It's a mix between a shopping mall, a sports center, and a hotel. It's in the very center of Berlin near Alexanderplatz. And in this case, there are maybe new ways of looking at activation of public life or urban life through components that are usually found on the outside of cities, like more in the countryside areas. In this case, it's a surf wave and an indoor skydiving. And these are also places that open up to the city. So have these big windows where you can see the TV tower of Alexanderplatz, you see the skyline of the city. You are on the level of the elevated train, the S-Bahn that runs through the city. You experience the subway that runs through the building in the basement. You're looking up towards the airplanes and TV towers. So it deals with all these dynamics and infrastructural layers and levels of the city that somehow magically all come together and cross our building on that location.
And it's an amazing idea. It sounds kind of, you know, like so much to pack in. And what are these ideas of skydiving and doing these huge events inside the building? How does that work? And what is the purpose of those kind of things? Because now we're talking about something that's way beyond a business and even kind of culture. There's this idea of a kind of drama in that kind of
right.
interaction, you know, huge drama, almost like the one in, I don't know, I've never been to Dubai, but I know there's kind of a wave machine in a mall there. What does that mean, and how does the city interact, will interact with these kind of events? Because that's almost an amusement park as well,
right? Yeah, it's a mix between a place where you have a lot of, let's say, cool brands and let's say an experience of products and of course of lifestyle that will be like unique in what they offer and what how they're gonna present it. But the idea of these kind of artificial natures in cities, maybe even a treadmill, you know, you can see as an artificial, you know, path running through a forest. You know, there's always kind of a tradition of having kind of a transformation and a mutation from a condition found somewhere else brought onto displaced into a different setting. And here we have the surf wave, which maybe has a history with the Eisbach, which is a small river in Munich running through the Englische Garden. There you have a little wave. It's actually a standing wave in a river, which is used for the, you know, the last 20, 30 years every day, you know, as a surf wave in the middle of the city. And it's so successful. And Jochen Schweitzer, who is now introducing and making this into business, who is running that surf wave here in Berlin, he's from Munich, and they are taking that kind of urban experience, which is for free in Munich because it's part of the park, into an even more condensed situation here in Berlin. And then indoor flight diving or the skydiving tunnel, that's a different form of course, experiencing the elements, in this case, the wind and air. We also use as a training center for parachuters and for pilots at night, so it also can run, you know, beyond the opening hours. So it has different forms of training, learning, experience, adventure, but also these become places where you hang out with friends. It's a meeting point. Even if you don't actively, you know, surf or dive, you are there because it's cool to hang out, and it's a place where people know when you say I'm at the surf wave, they know where you are and how they can find you.
So that use of space seems extraordinary to me. To have I don't know how big the skydiving tunnel is, but that sounds like a huge amount of just, you know, physical space to manage in there. And it, on one level, though it seems to have this training element as well, it's I don't know, by typical standards here, certainly in America, that's a very luxurious use of space.
I don't know how much they're going to charge for it, but there seems to be a demand and a kind of attraction to that experience. It's a lot of air that moves around, that's true, and a big part of the challenges is also with the surface that, of course, it also produces noise. And we are in the center of the city, there's housing around, so you really have to also technically control these side effects of it. And that, you know, is all kind of condensed in a very complex and interesting spatial organization. It's kind of a vertical mall / atrium space. It's a new typology that was gonna happen.
It's fascinating. And do you think Berlin will embrace that? Well, obviously the culture of Berlin in terms of arts and architecture has changed dramatically over the last 10, 15 years. Do you see this as reflecting that? And how does that fit into that? Because
I think we're in a new phase now in Berlin. When I moved here after studying in the States in 1994, I came to Berlin. The idea was a lot of opportunity for different voices to build up a new city that needs a lot of input, also a variety of inputs. The reality was completely different. It was all about working on the sentiment of a city that was lost, that had to be rebuilt, to create a fabric that somehow replaces or brings back what was or supposedly was gone, or what people think is gone. I think we are beyond that kind of rebuilding and beyond that that period, and now it's opening up and really introduces different forms of architectures, different forms of models, also in terms of housing models, not only, you know, apartments that you can buy, but building groups that start to initiate their own housing projects, different forms of how to kind of create in a kind of community a different, also financially possible way to live inside the center of the city. And also in terms of architectural expression, it's opening up, and then now it becomes really exciting again.
It is exciting, and I like the way you also summarize that. It's been great talking to you about these issues and your projects. I've been asking people what books you're reading. Do you mind telling me if there's any particular book you're reading now? It could be fiction, off topic, anything. But I'm curious if you would mind sharing that.
Well, I just started reading. No, actually, I'm finishing reading a book called 1913 by Florian Illies, which is a collection of just facts and quotes and little excerpts, similar to maybe Walter Benjamin's Passagen work, which all, you know, describes what happened in 1913. So it gives a really interesting understanding and a deep insight into that year 1913, which seemed to have changed our whole kind of future since then and our presence that is so based on what happened in that year. And then I'm also, but I just started, I'm on page 25, so I can't really talk about it yet. It's called A Little Life, a book by Hanya Yana Chihara, and that's a fiction, a story that happens in New York.
Well, thank you, Jürgen. I appreciate your time, and I want to thank you for talking with me today.
Well, thanks so much for talking, and it's exciting to share some thoughts about Berlin and architecture.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.